We are at the Advances in Cardiovascular Imaging session, and my name is Sabi Molloy from University of California at Irvine. We have four speakers. We'll have a short question and answer after each talk, and then we'll have at the end you can ask questions from all the speakers. The first talk is image guidance during minimally invasive cardiac intervention beyond fluoroscopy, and it will be given by Rebecca Farag.
Thanks, Sabi. Click to advance. And a pointer. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to acknowledge, first of all, funding sources, particularly Siemens Medical Solutions in my case, to acknowledge that. And, of course, collaborators and students, postdocs, and lots of technical expertise that went into the work that I'll be presenting. I also, because this is supposed to be somewhat of an overview of what's going on in the field, I also got material from other contributors, and I'd like to acknowledge their contributions. So there's Dr. Laurich, with whom I work at Siemens, Régis Vaillant, and co-authors provided some information on the work that they're doing using the AnovaSpin technology with GE, and Dr. Reddy and co-authors using technology from Philips Healthcare also provided some material. So first of all, why bother trying to do 3D imaging in the interventional suite during cardiac interventions? Because that's basically what my focus is going to be on here. first of all, both the number and complexity of minimally invasive cardiac interventions are on the increase. Electrophysiology interventions are increasing at the rate of at least 20% per year in our hospital. And there's also intracoronary interventions on the increase and valve replacement, which is coming down the pipe. So there's lots of reasons to try to bring in three-dimensional information into the interventional suite. I think there are also a lot of new molecular therapies under development for targeted treatment of ischemia that could have a place in the future with this technology. So the idea is that getting 3D information with the patient on the table for interprocedural guidance and monitoring of therapy is becoming necessary. So some of the, I'm going to focus particularly to begin with on image guidance of VP interventions. Some of the clinical applications that can be treated using RF ablation are those listed here. Particularly we've been looking at atrial fibrillation, but there's also ventricular tachycardia, for example, where they use RF ablation to deal with the fact that you have non-ideal or erratic impulses that cause the heart to beat in a way that is not efficient and doesn't actually produce good blood flow. By using the RF ablation, you can then cut off these pathways, these erratic impulses, and the heart rhythm returns to normal sinus rhythm. Normal image guidance of VP was done in the past using fluoroscopy and monitoring the ECG during the intervention. But more recently, there's been a move towards using electrophysiology mapping, that is using a catheter for which the 3D information is known, and mapping out the volume of the left atrium, which is where the one of the RF interventions is done, and then also bringing in a previous, for example, clinical CT or MR scan, and then looking at the two side by side to provide these increased detail of the 3D information, or actually fusing the volumes together. Just a review of 3D CRM imaging as compared to CT. CRM imaging is done using a partial circle scan over 200 degrees. It uses an irregular but reproducible imaging geometry that is known and calibrated ahead of time. The detector has a small field of view in the transaxial extent, but a large field of view in the Z extent, 30 by 40 centimeter area. I'll also be talking about some work done with a 20 by 20 centimeter detector, since that is the one that is more typically used with cardiac systems. The detector tends to have a slower readout rate, a maximum of 60 frames per second. If you use 4x4 binning, pixel size in that case would be about 0.6 millimeters at the detector. These CRMs have a slow rotation speed, maximum of about 60 degrees per second, which means that the fastest rotation you can do is about 4 seconds in order to acquire the 200 degrees worth of data that you need to do a 3D reconstruction. We've been doing standard reconstruction using Feldkamp with Parker weighting to deal with the short partial scan scenario. And I'm just showing a couple of systems here on the right. This is the one in our lab, and this is one that is built by GE. We can also use a CRM system to do CT with ECG gating. And although the idea of retrospective gating is old, we're doing this in the interventional suite. And how do we do that, given that we have a slow rotation speed and a gantry that doesn't do 360 degrees? And what I've shown here is the multi-sweep approach that we've been doing. The idea is you start an injection, intravascular injection of contrast agent. You wait a few seconds, usually about 15 seconds, do a breath hold, and then start that multi-sweep acquisition. Now, what do we do about reconstruction? Well, if we just looked at a single sweep rotation, then and we wanted to reconstruct a particular phase of the cardiac cycle, then what we would end up with is this patchy data. And this is what the reconstruction would look like, a lot of artifact, because we're not filling the needed data realm uniformly. But once we have a second rotation, we fill in patchy those gaps, and with a third rotation, fill in completely those gaps, assuming that the sweeps have been synchronized appropriately to the cardiac cycle. If you don't do that synchronization properly, then you don't end up filling the data space uniformly, and that can affect the quality of the reconstruction. So we then end up choosing at each phase of interest the view that is closest to the cardiac phase that we're reconstructing. So if we do a four-sweep acquisition, which is what I've shown here, the data I've shown here, then we have one out of four possible projections to choose to put into each reconstruction. So here I'm showing each projection image is an X, and I've shown it as a function of image number, where image number corresponds to image angle, and as a function of cardiac phase. And then a single sweep is filling in this data, as I'm showing here. If we wanted to reconstruct at the cardiac phase of 0.9, then we would choose these particular views, those that are closest to 0.9. And you can reconstruct other cardiac phases as well, although, as you can see, some cardiac phases are going to have larger distribution of cardiac phase information contributing to that reconstruction. In particular, if you have a scenario where you don't have a perfectly uniform cardiac rate during the acquisition, which is typical in vivo, particularly during a breath hold, then this is a scenario you might get where you can see at 0.8, 80% of the cardiac cycle, we've got a distribution of about 40% of the cardiac phase contributing to the reconstruction. If I look at 50% cardiac phase, then in fact that would get up to about 60% of the cardiac cycle, and you can imagine that the blurring in that situation would be pretty significant. In addition, of course, you'd like to focus on doing a reconstruction in diastole, where heart motion is at a minimum. This is the kind of image quality that we've been able to get in the lab using ECG gating. This is in a pig model, so this is ideal conditions imaging. In a pig model that weighs 45 to 55 kilograms with an ideal breath hold, a lowish scatter environment because the thorax is a little bit smaller than in humans, and in this case, a particularly low heart rate of about 60 beats per minute. But the image quality is pretty good. Looking at in a clinical case, this is this is a typical clinical case. No, this is one of our better cases. You can actually see the valve geometry quite nicely in this case. This was a four sweeps, 4 seconds per sweep, 200 projections per sweep. So each reconstructed volume uses about 200 projections, but the total scan time is 20 seconds, including time for the C-arm turnaround, which means that the total breath hold is about 24 seconds or so. It's pretty long. There's a 12 to 15 second delay between the start of injection and the start of imaging, and we're injecting into the inferior vena cava. And it's a fairly large bolus of contrast agent is required. And just to illustrate the impact of gating, this is one of our patients with no gating, and without gating. So, oops, oh, I want to go back. Can I go back? The other key, uh-huh. That makes sense. So, with gating, without gating, just to see the impact of gating on the reconstructed data. We've done a comparison of our gated information with clinical CT in 7 patients, comparing to 64-slice cardiac CT. And there was some delay between the acquisition of the clinical cardiac CT and the C-arm CT. Again, breath hold 20 to 30 seconds. And we measured the LA, the left atrium, in three volumes along two orthogonal axes at the largest cross-sectional area, and also the pulmonary veins were measured at the level of entry into the left atrium. I want to emphasize that in this study, the observer pulled up each volume independently, found the view of interest, and did those measurements. So there was no use of the clinical CT when looking at the CRM CT data. And this is what we saw. First of all, this is a single reader at the moment. The intra-reader variability was pretty low. Again, just to emphasize that we did the CRM CT data was done first. But the correlation between the gated CRM CT and the clinical CT was pretty consistent. And the measurements were within plus or minus 0.5 millimeters. Now, it is possible to do this kind of acquisition, particularly imaging in the left atrium, using a non-gated acquisition. There's some very nice work done by Phillips and their collaborators using a small 20 centimeter by 20 centimeter detector. They do a single sweep acquisition, 4 seconds per sweep, about 120 projections contributing to the reconstruction in this case. And sometimes, again, because it's the smaller 20 centimeter by 20 centimeter, they have to do two separate acquisitions to cover the left atrium. The total breath hold per acquisition is 10 seconds. 2 to 8 second delay is used between the start of injection and the start of imaging. And they evaluate the transit time. They actually inject into the left or right branch of the pulmonary arteries and then evaluate the transit time with a test bolus to see when that contrast comes back into the left atrium. Then they do a registration of the two volumes using the spinal column detail. They've shown the accuracy and utility of this approach in 42 patients. 71% of the 3D volumes were deemed at least useful, and the absolute differences were only on the order of 2.5 millimeters as compared to clinical CT. And they also showed that the feasibility of registering these volumes with electroanatomical maps. So this is something that we've also done. I think that just to give you an example of what that would look like, this is left atrium segmentation, and then this is the electroanatomical map, again, made by sort of a point cloud integral from moving the catheter around, and this is the segmented left atrium, and then you can overlay those two quite nicely, and you can actually get additional detail from the presence of the 3D anatomical map. And the thing that I'd like to point out here is that although we haven't done this yet, the idea is that you could pre-calibrate the CRM system so that when you do the left atrium imaging, you then already know what the registration would be between the EAM system and the clinical CT, the CRM CT volume, so that you wouldn't have to go through what is currently a fairly lengthy process to register those two volumes. And that could save significantly on the procedure. Although in the literature, you know, typical registration times are certainly not more than 15 minutes, when we talk to our clinicians, we certainly we hear of much longer times that are necessary, and often the registration that is achieved isn't really as good as they would like it to be. So I think the pre-registration possibility is really important. Now, looking at gated versus non-gated acquisitions, we also extended our study of gated compared to clinical CT to non-gated compared to clinical CT. To do the non-gated, we just took a single sweep of our gated acquisition and we reconstructed it without the ECG gated, without the ECG data. But I'd like to emphasize that this is not the same as the previously described single sweep protocol. For one thing, because we were doing an IVC injection and it was a 24-second acquisition, it was a much longer imaging time, and so the contrast in the left atrium was much lower than you would get with the single sweep protocol. In addition, the over or underlying opacified structures complicate visualization, and I think there's a real advantage from having the shorter breath hold of 10 seconds, because getting someone to hold their breath for 24 seconds just isn't that easy. But this does provide some this study does provide some indication of the impact of motion on reconstruction accuracy. And what we saw was that the non-gated CRM-CT showed wider variation in terms of the agreement with clinical CT depending on the vessel type, and typically those the pulmonary veins that are more anterior have more motion than those that are posterior because they're farther from the tethering point of the heart. But still, just to point out, even over all locations, the disagreement only ranges from minus 1 to 0.5 millimeters on the non-gated images. So gating is sort of optional, I think, in the case of left atrium imaging for this type of guidance. One of the other things that you would want to be able to get out of this 3D information in the interventional suite is visualization of the esophagus. One of the catastrophic events associated with the RF ablation is creation of a fistula from the left atrium to the esophagus if the esophagus is too close to a point of treatment. And so being able to see where the esophagus is at the time of treatment, I think, is could be of significant advantage. Although this is not, this catastrophic event doesn't actually happen all that often. Some very nice work shown here with a barium swallow, and you can then see where the esophagus is quite clearly in a CRM CT, a reconstructed volume. That's the work from this group. We've also been looking at this in our non-contrast enhanced gated images. You can see here that you can see the esophagus quite clearly. This is a trained radiologist looking at these images. I couldn't have picked it out of a haystack to begin with, although you do get better at it. You can even see a little bit of the fat pad that is between the esophagus and the left atrium in this case. And here is an example. The image quality isn't great, but you can actually see the esophagus has moved from the location of the clinical CT to the CRM CT acquisition. And that is, in fact, what we're trying to be able to show. So one of the advantages of ECG-gated imaging is the fact that you can look at the left ventricle. And because we're doing gating, you don't have as much motion in the left ventricle, and so we think that we can actually see myocardium. And then the question is, could we actually see the RF ablation scar as the treatment is going on? We've looked at this by creating a scar. This is in an animal model in the left ventricle, and then we acquired images during an IV injection of contrast. This is very early work. We've seen an interesting pattern of enhancement that I don't want to put a stake in the ground on at all yet, but we're encouraged because initially we see what looks like a deficit in signal in the myocardium, and then later, at a later imaging time point, we see what looks like a late signal enhancement, and that's what I'm showing here with these measurements of the late enhancement and then continued contrast in the location of the RF ablation. What about imaging in the presence of devices? This is going to be a serious problem if we're thinking about doing this type of imaging during, for example, valve placement therapies. One of the things that we're going to need to do is come up with automatic correction techniques to remove artifact from these devices. And I think the real key here is to make sure that it is automatic. This is showing work that was done by colleagues, Dr. Hornegger and Marcus Prümmer, looking at automatic detection of linear objects on a complicated background. And then you can do simple, you can subtract out the object and do simple interpolation that will end up significantly reducing the artifact from those objects. The flip side of that is, could we actually image such high contrast moving objects in the cardiac suite? And this is work that was carried out by a group working with GE. They have done some imaging during intracoronary injections and then modeled the motion of the coronary arteries and applied algebraic reconstruction techniques to get very nice reconstructions of cardiac coronary vessels. So they do some pre-computation using computer vision methods to do angiogram filtering and segmentation of the vessels. They do centerline matching, and then they calculate a very sparse 4D motion vector field. This all depends on having a good way to do background subtraction, because what they do is what they assume is a very sparse object. And then 3D tomographic reconstruction at a particular given phase, and then with the 4D motion field at any cardiac phase. I want to emphasize the motion compensation in this case because it's very interesting. They do multi-ocular matching of quasi-synchronous views. I interpret this to mean they take various views that they know are at the same cardiac phase, and then they do breath motion compensation to deal with the fact that the breathing at the time of the acquisition is different. And that, I think, is fantastic, being able to do breath motion compensation. It's something that we definitely need to look at in the case of our ECG-gated acquisitions, where the breath holds are difficult to maintain over the long acquisition. And so this just shows the tracking of the vessels in the different views. And then, again, emphasizing that the motion vector field is a very local motion vector field using B-splines and well-chosen knot vectors at particular points of intersection, for example, in the vessels. They use a non-rigid or semi-local behavior and make sure that it's spatially and temporally smooth. And then, of course, the back projection is back projecting a particular point, taking into account the location of that point in 3D space. So more or less back projecting over a curved trajectory, except that focusing only on the particular sparse points of interest on the vessels. And one more click. Oh. And just to show you some of their very nice results, the top set is a 3D reconstruction, and the bottom set is a 4D reconstruction, showing the vessels in the beating heart acquired with a single rotation of a C-arm gantry. So very impressive image quality. Stop. Ah, okay. They've also applied the same type of approach to reconstructing coronary stents. Reconstructing coronary stents, and again, doing a geometric analysis based on the markers of the angioplasty balloon here to be able to track the motion of the stent, and some of the results shown here. Again, very nice detail in the stent. You could actually tell, for example, if the stent was fully deployed or not by doing this kind of reconstruction. We've also looked at doing that same type of imaging, or imaging with that same goal using ECG-gated acquisitions. I would emphasize that there are a few problems with using ECG gating in this context. For one thing, because we have a long acquisition time, 24 seconds, and we're injecting subselectively into the coronaries for a long time, and I'm not sure how what clinicians would say about that in terms of acceptance, for example. On the other hand, we do get very nice parenchymal enhancement, and we might be able to use that again to look at things like RF scar or differences in uptake of contrast in the parenchyma. We've also done some work looking at motion vector field correction approaches to improve image quality. You could think of this as either a dose reduction technique or an image quality improvement technique. The idea is if we had, for example, a six-sweep acquisition, then we could reconstruct six cardiac cycles. From the six cardiac cycles, we can calculate dense motion vector fields that relate this particular cardiac phase to a reference cardiac phase. From that, we get a smooth motion vector field over the whole cardiac cycle, which we can then apply image by image to the reconstruction and combine all 1,000 projections that we acquired into a single higher signal-to-noise ratio image data set. So that's what I'm showing here. We have a single filtered back projection. We back project and then warp the volume into through which we back projected of that particular back projection, and then sum up all of those warped back projections to get the final reconstructed volume. And the warping is driven by this dense motion vector field that we calculated. We have seen some improvement in signal-to-noise ratio. These images are particularly blotchy ones, I have to admit. We have an original multi-phase, multi-sweep reconstruction. So this was just using a single sweep for this using a single sweep. And then if we did a single sweep using no motion correction, and then a single sweep using motion vector field correction. But I think more interesting is the potential improvement in SNR that you can get from using the motion vector field information to be able to accumulate all 1,000 of the projections. So this is a single sweep reconstruction. This is what you would get if you took the six volumes that I talked about and corrected them using the motion vector field and then averaged the six volumes. And then these are two different approaches of using the motion vector field, different parameters in the motion vector field, to accumulate all 1,000 projections individually into the final volume. So it's two different approaches for using the motion vector field information, and certainly the SNR1, SNR2 approach is the better of the two. This just shows how you can trade off signal-to-noise ratio as a function of resolution by playing around with the parameters in the motion vector field. This is what you get for signal-to-noise ratio with a single-sweep FDK, and you can actually get better signal-to-noise ratio and not see any decrease in the resolution by using this motion vector field, the dense deformation motion vector fields. So to conclude, we think that intraprocedural CRMCT, gated or non-gated, has the potential to increase accuracy, reduce repeat interventions, reduce total interventional time, and potentially reduce x-ray dose during EP procedures. There are a lot of other soft tissue applications, such as scar visualization, that could also benefit from having ECG-gated CRMCT in the interventional suite. Non-gated CRMCT with motion compensation provides accurate 3D plus T or 4D reconstructions of arteries and stents. And there's still a lot of work to make this clinically useful. For example, I think that there's a lot of image processing still to do, real-time 2D, 3D overlay. We need accelerated graphics reconstruction algorithms to allow acquisition of data and reconstruction within a clinically useful time frame, which my clinical collaborators always say is 2 minutes. So there's a lot of work to do there. And there's a lot of work that we can do to further improve image quality. For example, scatter correction, cone beam geometry, more advanced cone beam geometry algorithms in the reconstructions, and a lot of other potential improvements. Thank you for your attention.
Any questions? One question for you. The 140 milliliter of contrast seems pretty large volume.
Interestingly, when we talk to our clinical CT colleagues, that doesn't seem like a large volume. I mean, it seems normal. You would typically do it by weight of the patient in terms of finding the upper limit. We have actually been doing 75%, so we've been diluting a little bit. So it's 140 volume of injected material, but more like 110 maybe in our clinical studies. There's trade-offs there, trying to get a higher injection rate versus versus a full concentration of contrast at a lower injection rate, for example. So, but the thing that I think is of more concern with using 140 mils of contrast is that that would only allow you to do one or maybe two during an intervention, and I think what we really want to get to is being able to do multiple acquisitions if we can get the dose down during an intervention, and that would then require reduction in contrast. Have we looked at the clinical significance of the detected motion from the motion vector field? Is there one? So, for example, could we see contractility changes and that kind of thing? Yeah, no, we haven't looked at that yet. I would be hesitant to say that we could get accurate contractility results. I think that the motion vector fields that we are able to calculate are fairly rough approximations because the image quality in systole from the gated acquisitions is not the best because there's so much cardiac motion and we still have quite a large cardiac window of data contributing to the reconstruction. But it certainly is something that we could look at.
So this is really a similar question. I was particularly intrigued by your box that was undulating there, and you would think that you could pull all sorts of interesting functional parameters. You're really in the business of replacing the cardiologist here, it seems to me. There's a lot of physiologic information there that extends beyond the vascular anatomy. One would think, well, motion abnormalities, atrial timing issues.
Yeah, I would say that in an ideal world, we could get information that was that good, but I would very much hesitate to say that we will ever replace clinical cardiac CT with 33 milliseconds of temporal resolution. We will not get that. And I think even with the newer CRM technologies that are coming up, rotation times are still going to be on the order of 3 seconds. So the best we can do is a 3-second rotation. And even with the multi-sweep acquisitions, we don't have 1,000 projections. Maybe 10 years down the road when we get better detectors, we'll have more projections contributing to the reconstructions. But I would say that we will not anytime soon be replacing clinical CT, and I think the goal is to provide additional information during the intervention rather than trying to replace that diagnostic information.